Bills to hear in approximately 120 minutes. So we divide that up. It's about 8 to 9 minutes per bill. So we're going to, and you have to stay with us because we're going to move around a lot because we have a lot of different people testifying. So we will open a work session on House Bill 3247, Representative Miller. And I know this is a busy day for you, Randy, so it's nice to see you this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, State Representative Randy Miller, District 37. I'm going to make brief preliminary comments and then take leave and allow the experts here on this particular issue to speak. But what I'm proposing are the dash two amendments of House Bill 3247, Mr. Chairman, which remedy an incredible situation on a piece of property familiar to me known as Langdon Farms. It's a public golf course in the Aurora area along the freeway. Many of you perhaps have seen it as you approach Portland on I-5. What's incredible to me is the fact that we need to have legislation to allow the serving of food and beverages on this golf course in a, frankly, a building that is currently constructed, used for another purpose. But because of our screwed up land use planning laws, there is a need to come to this committee to get this rational change. Mr. Chairman, my frustration is that anyone even argues about this kind of issue. And to me, it is emblematic of the fact that, or one of the reasons why Oregon has the leading unemployment figure in the United States, and it's because we are so trapped in terms of just even considering small development, which this really doesn't qualify as, and we have to have a fight in some legislative committee over permitting this kind of activity. It's a sad commentary on our state of affairs, but again, I think it provides evidence as to why Oregon is so deep in recession. With those kind opening comments, Mr. Chairman, I thank you for your time, your consideration. I now will yield to Mr. Chris Melitis, who can state to the particulars and the need for this particular amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Gentlemen, we'll appreciate you keeping your comments as brief as possible.
Thank you. Thank you for the time. My name is Chris Melitis. I'm the owner, along with my brother Tom, of Langdon Farms. The way the rule is currently written, it makes it very, very difficult for golf course operators to just operate a golf course in the normal method on EFU land. Two other courses, both Pumpkin Ridge and the Reserve, are on EFU land. They're utilizing more than one facility, whether rightfully or wrongfully. And obviously, there's major national championships coming to this town. And I'm not here to criticize what they're doing as much as just trying to, because we are a public only and we don't have any private involvement at all. We have a lot of tourism coming through. We have a lot of corporate outing, fundraisers for charities. We support the high school boys and girls. They come to our course every year. We open the course up to them. We have a lot of people who golf, of course, for the very first time, and the way the current law reads, or the rule reads, is that we can only sell product out of one structure. What you have up there is that little building was originally built, and that was a pump house. And we are no longer using that as a pump house, and we decided to turn that into a snack shop. So we went to Clackamas County for the permitting. That's probably 25 feet from the main building. We were putting a mobile hot dog unit out there regardless of the weather, and that was really problematic. It was problematic to the people when it was wet, not to be undercover, et cetera. So we went to Clackamas County for a permit, and they came back and sent us back the rule and underlined it that we could only sell food and beverage out of one facility on the entire golf course. And so that's why we're here. And Jack Orchard, who represents ourselves and some other courses, has some comment. He's experienced it in the past.
For the record, my name is Jack Orchard. Represent Langdon Farms, and actually was involved with Langdon Farms' creation as an all-public course in Clackamas County. Langdon Farms actually has not only the buildings you see there, but also has another building. And perhaps as further illustration of the problem, while I was waiting for Chris this morning, there was a small meeting going on in one of the other buildings on site. The food service, which was actually just beverage service, had to be physically carried over from the pro shop into a building that's primarily used for administrative purposes. The inability to have those kinds of accessory services, ancillary services to just the basic operation of the golf course is illustrative of how fine the present rules have been ground to deal with golf course operation. I've had a fair amount of experience in dealing with golf courses throughout the Portland metro area. There's a huge variety. Golf courses are businesses, and each golf course operates in its own way. The rule that's presently being administered is a rule that is very restrictive. It says any food, beverage, or other kinds of commercial service, down to buying a sleeve of golf balls, has to occur in a single building on the course. And that really just does not conform with the reality of how golf courses are organized, how people play golf, how golfers choose to avail themselves of those kinds of services. Not everybody who wants a soft drink or a sandwich wants to go into the pro shop and then perhaps back to resume a round of golf. So the request that's in front of the committee is to have the rules really conform with the reality of how golf courses, certainly in Oregon, really nationally operate, with facilities that are organized to serve the golfing patrons as opposed to being pigeonholed into a specific kind of format for their use. Most of the golf courses in Oregon have multiple buildings in which multiple food, beverage, and commercial services take place. And the illustration that Chris gave you shows you how extreme the rule is operated. We have no quarrel with Clackamas County in terms of the way the county administered the rule. It was a correct administration of the existing rule. It just produces an incorrect result. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Very brief.
Representative Greenlee, okay. Please make it brief.
Yeah, can I ask, is everything here, this is a long set of amendments, and I just saw them, on page 8, 20, and 31, is it all, I mean, is the only thing this thing, I didn't see anything else, is it only in that expansion of the use of a golf course?
We're here to talk about that specific issue, that's right, Representative Greenlee.
But that's all there is in the dash 2 amendments, is that right?
You'll have to ask Mr. Honeycutt about
it. Yeah,
that's my understanding.
Yes,
okay.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Anyone opposed to House Bill 3247 that would like to speak? I'll give you 1 minute. Because we know you'll be up here a lot today.
Jumping up and down. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Carrie McLaren, staff attorney for 1000 Friends of Oregon. We're speaking today in opposition to the Dash 2 amendments, relating to the amendments you just heard in discussion. These uses are exceptions to what is normally allowed in an EFU zone. The purpose of those exceptions is to keep them rather limited in scope and impact to surrounding farmland. There's nothing in this bill that limits this, the size of the structures and their ability to draw additional traffic, et cetera, that might be in conflict with surrounding farm uses. For those reasons, we oppose these Dash 2 amendments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have one more person that would like to testify on this bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, and I represent the Oregon Golf Association. We strongly support the bill. And I just want to point out to you, I played golf literally all over the world. And in almost every instance, golf courses provide facilities where you can have a snack or buy a pop on the round. Some golf courses are laid out so it's convenient to just do it with a 9 holes cross. Some of them are laid out so it's a continuous 18 holes, and there's no break in the middle. The structures we're talking about are not large. They're the size of this or smaller. And in a state like Oregon, where it pours a lot of the time, but some of us are still foolhardy enough to go out and play golf, it's nice to be able to step undercover, and you can't do that with a mobile facility that Langdon Farms has had. I just want to point out to you that Chris Miletus and his brother, Tom, are good friends of mine who I've known for a long time. They're businessmen who have bought this golf course and turned it into one of the showpieces. Both political parties have your fundraisers there when you're during the off-season when you're running for office. You enjoy it. It's a great place. And I think this is an extremely reasonable request that should be granted. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Roger, very much. Representative Richardson, we have a motion on the dash two amendments on 3247.
Mr. Chair, I move that dash two amendments be amended into House Bill 3247.
Representative Richardson moves that we adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 3247. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Greenwood?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Excused.
Representative Zollner?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Berard?
Chair votes aye. The dash two amendments are adopted to House Bill 3247. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3247, as amended, be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Richardson moves House Bill 3247, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenwood?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Excused.
Representative Zollner?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Berard?
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3247 is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Ackerman, would you like to carry this bill?
Yes, be happy to. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Ackerman will carry. And we will open we'll close the work session on House Bill 3247 and open a work session on House Bill 2860.
It's going to be something to keep track of today.
Oh, I know.
2860.
Mr. Chandler, good morning. I believe we have dash two amendments to 2860.
Yep.
We heard this bill on March 25th.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, the dash two amendments are not quite right. There is one significant change that needs to take place in order for the Department of 1000 Friends to be comfortable with the bills, change that we're fine with. The printed bill, we simply forgot to allege counsel. The piece that was in a base bill that was shown as deleted needs to be undeleted in the amendments. So if you can, Mr. Crane is out in the hallway, I believe, but I don't know if he could turn one around quickly enough to get it back here before the end of the hearing, but with your permission, I'll go inquire.
Okay, well, what we can do, this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but we can wait and come back.
If you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, let me go talk to Mr. Crane and make double sure that that can happen.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Chandler. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2860 and open a work session on House Bill 3462.
Are we going to come back to 2862?
Yeah, we will come back to 2862. Okay. Got to find
3462.
All right. Mr. High. And is Mr. Cyrus here? Please come forward.
3462 now.
This is 3462, yeah. Yeah. For the committee, this is what's commonly referred to as a gut and stuff.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andy High from the House Majority Office. And what we have is, like the chair said, a gut and stuff to allow for sporting clays to be used on private hunting preserves. You'll see as you flip through, I dropped amendments off yesterday, and there should be a few more coming here, just right there, and it's a couple one-liners in there. I'm going to have Matt Cyrus to my left here explain why this is needed.
Cyrus?
Mr. Chair, Matt Cyrus, Deschutes County. Currently in the state, there's approximately 68 private hunting reserves licensed by the ODFW. And on most of these preserves, sporting clays are used as a warm-up for just as a driving range on a golf course. The problem we ran into is that even though almost all of these preserves do that, the statute is silent with regard to the allowance of this activity, and some of the counties have determined that because there is no specific allowance, therefore it's not allowed. And so some of the preserves are beginning to come under fire from county planning that, in fact, an activity that's been going on for years is no longer an allowed use within a licensed preserve. And all this language would do would be to clarify that on a licensed hunting preserve, sporting clays are an allowed use.
Do we have those amendments?
Coming right now.
Yes, coming right now, Representative. Any questions of Mr. Cyrus and Mr. Hill? In committee, I apologize. This is going to be a last-minute morning for a lot of changes on amendments. And if at any time you desire some extra time to familiarize yourself with an amendment during the work session, please let the chair know. Is there any questions of Mr. High or Mr. Cyrus? Okay, seeing none, thank you.
Any motion?
Representative Zahner.
Mr. Chair, I move we accept the House Bill 3462, the Dash 1 amendments to 3462.
Representative Zahner moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3462. Any discussion?
If we could just have a moment to see what the changes are. Are they only the changes on page 6?
Hi. Andy, could you come back for a moment?
Adding that to.
Oh, we have a question from Representative Greenlick in regard to the Dash 1 amendment.
Are the only changes the changes in adding that same language that's on page 6? I understand it may be somewhere else. There are no other changes in the middle.
If you flip through to page 7, Mr. Chair. Representative Greenlick, as you flip through on page 7, you'll see, other than hunting preserves license, it's pretty much the same language all the way through, just revising that within statute.
Right. It's not doing anything but that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, I do know that Representative Butler is here to speak on 34.
Cool. All right. We got a number
for that. He left, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
He heard the motion and took off.
Yeah, I heard the motion and ran.
We do have a motion on the floor. Representative Greenlight, are you comfortable with your amendment now?
Thank you.
Okay.
Sure. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excuse.
Representative Donner. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. The Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3462 are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move 3462 as amended to the House floor with a due recommendation.
Representative Zahner moves House Bill 3462 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Greenlight?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Excused.
Representative
Zahner?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Garrard?
Chair votes aye. Let's see. Do we have a volunteer to carry this?
You want to participate? Consent?
I move through on the consent calendar, Mr. Chair.
Representative Zahner has moved that we put House Bill 3462 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, we will move House Bill 3462 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended, and it will be on the consent calendar. Okay, committee, we will now open a work session on House Bill 2912. This does have a referral to Ways and Means, and it has a dash four amendment. Mr. Chandler, good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, Legislative Advocates. The 2912 amendments dash four look to be precisely what the folks who put in the amendments agreed to with me on the bill. And I just wanted to state for the record that we are still discussing the bill with folks who are interested in it. It may come back to you in a slightly different form. I've had a number of very good conversations with the members of the governor's staff, with Mr. Stacey, one from 1,000 Friends. And Mr. Stacey and I share a couple of concerns, and I think Mr. Tucker is going to address this as well. I just want to make it clear on the record for this committee. The area where we're still negotiating is on how focused or broad the inquiry ought to be, and that's a discussion we're still having. The one area where we do agree is that this needs to be done right, if it's going to be done at all. And part of that is the funding. It does, as you said, Mr. Chairman, have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I believe, that if the funding isn't there from the state, from publics, from private sources, from academic sources, from wherever, to do this analysis of the land use system properly, it should not be done at all. And I just want to place on the record my commitment to make sure that that does occur, and if it doesn't occur, it'd be my intention to not move the bill any further than that. This is too important a topic to be done in a halfway fashion. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I would commend the dash four amendments to you. I appreciate the help that everybody else has put in on this bill. I don't know if Mr. Tucker wants to speak or not, but thank you very much.
Are there any questions in regard to the dash four amendments for Mr. Chandler? Okay, thank you, Randy. 1 minute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Randy Tucker, 1,000 Friends of Oregon. David is distributing right now a letter that you should have received from my boss, our director, Bob Stacey, earlier this week. Bob sent this out without talking to me, and while he later felt like it might have been a little bit intemperate, I think it actually served a couple of useful purposes. First of all, it effectively bypassed the inside the building itis that I certainly get, and I know that others probably get when we hang out here all the time. It was a good thing that he sent this, I think. And it has stimulated a productive conversation with Mr. Chandler, as he said, about the most productive and effective way to have this conversation about the future of our land use programs. With all due respect to the chair and Mr. Chair, you know the respect that I have for you. This process that we've been going through the last week or two has already occasioned comments from the committee about the relatively sort of piecemeal way that we're looking at all these bills when we do need to take a broader look at the program. And Bob has asked some big questions in this letter. If you look at the paragraph at the bottom of page one, I think these are some questions that we really do need to be asking. The conversation that we've been having with John has had to do, as he said, with the magnitude and the scope of this discussion. We're certainly, as I think I've said previously in this committee, we welcome the opportunity to discuss the future of our program. The other major point is we do need to ensure that this kind of a discussion is adequately funded so that we can do it right. And so with those comments, I'll...
Thank you, Randy.
Any questions?
You went over the minute.
I'm sorry.
Just want to let you know.
Thanks. I'm not speaking in opposition to the bill, by the way. I should say that.
We appreciate that.
Or generally supportive, I suppose we should say.
And the chair, it's unfortunate, but the time perimeters given this committee were not this committee's design. It was designed of powers to be that have rushed us sometimes to the decisions and to the amount of time we've been allocated to address what we know are very serious and somewhat complicated. Actually, we haven't had a bill here that wasn't complicated. So, John, do you have...
Thank you. I will understand that, and I just wanted to say for the record...
Thank you. I don't want you to feel the committee is trying to...
Very quickly, I forgot to mention what these amendments do. Have a discussion. What the amendments do is they increase the size of the committee, they add a member of the timber industry in addition to a member of the agricultural industry. It would add a sitting county commissioner or county judge in addition to a city representative, and it would add a member of the Metro of Metropolitan Service District. And would do keep the number somewhat small by deleting one of the two public members the bill called out. That's the makeup of the committee changes. On the substantive side, these amendments add a new item, the efficient use of urban land, which is an issue that was important to Metro and I believe the governor, because that's one of the things we have to look at in terms of moving, expanding boundaries is how the land is used inside the boundaries. So that's what these changes make. I'm absolutely fine with those. I think the discussion needs to continue, and again, I urge you to support the Dash 4s and move the bill down to Ways and Means. Thank you very much.
Thank you both.
Thank you for indulgence, Mr. Chair.
Move the Dash 4s.
Mr. Chair, I move Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2912.
Representative Zahner has moved the Dash 4 amendment to be adopted to House Bill 2912. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excuse me.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Girard.
Chair votes aye. The Dash 4 amendments are adopted to House Bill 2912. Representative Zahner.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2912 as adopted, as amended to the Ways and Means of the DPAS recommendation.
Representative Zahner has moved House Bill 2912 as amended to a referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion with the DPAS recommendation? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenlaw.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excuse.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Girard.
And a chair votes aye. House Bill 2912, as amended, is referred to Ways and Means. And we close the work session on House Bill 2912. Open a work session on House Bill 3013. Committee, we have Dash 1 amendments to 3013. Do we have anyone that wants to speak to the Dash 1 amendments? Rich, do you want to speak to the Dash 1?
Chairman Don Schellenberg, Oregon Farm Bureau. I believe those are our amendments. Somebody else
has
amendments.
And we are, Don. You're right.
And we did address those amendments before, as I recall, so I didn't realize that I needed to address them again.
Let's just see if there's any questions
okay.
to the Dash 1s.
Okay.
Committee, have any questions to the Dash 1 amendment?
Let me find them. I'm having a little trouble here. Okay.
If my memory, if I just need to review them briefly, by memory, what they do is provide that on Class 1 through Class 4 land, land does need to be on a list. For the lesser quality land, no listing required. And I mentioned earlier that we would be amenable to an additional amendment that would grandfather in all existing lots. All existing aggregate mines that were cited as a conditional use.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3013 be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation as originally drafted.
Representative Richardson has moved House Bill 3013 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
I'm going to vote aye at this moment, but this is happening a little faster for me, so I deserve the right to think about it on the floor.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative
Zahner.
Aye. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Girard.
And the chair votes aye. House Bill 3013 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative, do we have a volunteer that would like to carry this bill? Representative Richardson, would you carry this bill?
I'll volunteer.
Thank you very much. Representative Richardson will carry House Bill 3013. And we close the work session on House Bill 3013. And we will open a work session on House Bill 3017. Or a work session on House Bill 3017.
Again, we have dash one amendments. Good morning, Mr. Wilson.
Good morning, Chair Garrard, members of the committee. I am going to walk you through the amendments because Chad Johnson is the requester of the bill, asked if I would. This is about siting homes on land adjacent to golf courses. That is the crux of House Bill 3017. The dash one amendments aim to tighten up the bill a bit. Section 1, sub 1, by saying on the effective date of this 2003 Act, you do two things. It prevents a golf course from altering its boundaries in order to be able to site homes on land adjacent to it in order to accommodate more homes. It also means that this act only applies to existing golf courses and not golf courses that may be built in the future. So this bill only applies to existing golf courses. It allows for to divide into parcels of 2.5 acres for single-family dwellings, allows for parcels of 5 acres adjacent to golf course land for the purpose of having multifamily residential housing. The Section 1, Sub 2 is important because it defines what contiguous land is with relation to a golf course. It means that it has to share a common boundary. They're on line 16 and 17. So the land contiguous to a golf course means a land that shares a common boundary up to 2,000 feet. It is not an unlimited thing. We put a 2,000-foot cap on it. Also, it excludes land that is separated from the boundary of the golf course by a road, river, or stream. I think the important thing to convey to the committee is there is precedent for, obviously, for development of golf courses. There are 62 golf courses outside of UGB right now. Of those, 34 are either partially or fully developed. 12 of those can't be developed at all because they're either in forest land or coastal dune or something like that. So you're talking about 16 golf courses in the state of Oregon that have the capacity to be developed but are not with House Bill 3017. And I would include, I would think there is some demand for golf course living or for building homes adjacent to golf courses. So I would talk to you about the precedent of putting homes on golf courses, that there is sufficient demand for this, and it at least gives the option for landowners adjacent to a golf course to have that option.
Any questions?
Those are the dash one.
Any questions of Mr. Wilson? Seeing none, thank you very much, Jeff. Representative Zahner.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3017.
Representative Zahner has moved the dash one amendments to House Bill 3017. Is there any discussion?
Could I just borrow somebody's dash one amendments so I can see what they
there
are?
There you go. Here.
Would Representative
Thank
Green
you very
like
much. I'm sure it's here somewhere.
It is.
Would you like 30 seconds, Representative Green?
No, I think I'm okay. Thank you.
Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
No.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative
Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Garrard.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3017, the dash one amendments are adopted for House Bill 3017. And let's see, Representative Zahner.
You need to gavel that.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3017 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Zahner has moved House Bill 3017 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
No.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Garrard.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3017, as amended, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and this is Representative Close's bill, so we'll assign Betsy the job of carrying that on the floor. Close the work session on House Bill 3017, and let's see, is Representative Dalto? There he is. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3561. Representative Dalto.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Under Sheriff Greg Olson to come up and testify first and continue with your program, and I'd like to speak last.
We'll ask you that between the two of you, you keep your comments to about 5-6 minutes.
I'll see you when you charge your claim 60 on that 10.
Okay. First, Mr. Kelly, would you inform the committee in that this is the first time we've really had a look at House Bill 3561?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3561 authorizes establishment of law enforcement or parole and post-prison supervision facilities for providing services in rural areas, not including adult correctional or juvenile detention center facilities. It declares an emergency effective on passage. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Oregon Revised Statute Chapter 215 establishes allowable uses and exclusive farm use zones. House Bill 3561 adds law enforcement or parole and post-supervision prison supervision facilities for providing services in rural areas to the list of allowable uses. Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Sheriff, good morning.
Good morning. I'm Greg Olson. I'm the Undersheriff of Marion County Sheriff's Office. And I'm here because in the budget year of 2002, Marion County had some budget constraints, and because of that, we had to move out of an office that we were currently renting. And a property owner in the Jervis area offered us free office space at the old horticultural laboratory that he had on his property. And that's located on Portland Road, northeast of Jervis. And when we began researching the statutes, we found that we could get a conditional use permit for 6 months per calendar year. So that took care of 2002, and we applied for a conditional use permit for this year from January to July for 6 months. After July, according to the conditional use permit, we'll have to move our offices. And these offices are being offered to us at no charge for rent, and we're using those offices to support our enforcement division, which has an office there, and provides law enforcement services for the north end of Marion County. And also we have some parole and probation officers assigned there that provide parole and probation services for the north end of northern Marion County. And so we're asking for this change so that we can have our office there in the rural area.
Are there any questions of the sheriff? Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Oh, Representative Doyle.
Thank you. Can you just explain what post-prison supervision facilities would be?
Parole probation officers.
And that's it?
That's it.
And it's just, well, you're saying offices?
That's offices for the parole probation officers to have their clients come to.
Okay. Facilities is kind of a broader word than just offices. What else would parole probation folks be involved in? What other kind of facilities would they use?
Our intent was just that, just offices.
Okay. I guess my question, though, is what other kind of facilities would normal post, or would there be for post-prison supervision? Anything else but offices?
Maybe for training classes or something like that, but no custody. If you're talking about custody beds, no. Or jail beds, no. That wouldn't be close office.
And that's because more specifically, excluding adult correctional and detention juvenile detention facilities.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you,
Representative. Okay. We have no amendments to this bill, committee. Opposition. You know, I keep forgetting that. Don, come on up, and Kerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representative of the Oregon Farm Bureau.
I'm glad you two aren't holding hands yet.
Mr. Chairman, that won't happen.
That says a lot for you, Kerry.
Understand the purpose of the bill and what they're trying to do here. It is a single issue. However, as the bill is drafted, it's a policy issue, and it establishes a policy of these kind of activities being allowed as a permitted use, outright permitted use, in a farm zone. We wouldn't be concerned about the bill if it were a conditional use. And if that conditional use were conditioned that it served primarily the residents of the rural community, then we would not oppose the bill. I'm a little nervous about parole and post-prison supervision facilities, whatever all of that means, as Representative Doyle is. But remember, Mr. Chairman, there are 50 permitted and conditional uses in the farm zone now. This would be number 51. I've talked with them. I think they misunderstand that they could have cited this as a conditional use. And if that were the case and those conditions put in there, then we wouldn't be opposed to the bill. But as the bill is drafted, we would necessarily have to oppose it. Thank you, Mr.
So in other words, Don, the building is there, right? I mean, it just wasn't done properly originally.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the building is there. The concern is, what is the use of the building in this particular case? But if you cite it as a permitted use, then it can be done in any county, in any place, in any county, when it's done as a permitted use. That's our concern, that it sets a policy that we're not prepared to support.
Carrie?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carrie McLaren, staff attorney for 1000 Friends of Oregon. I will echo much of what Mr. Schellenberg said. I want to just clarify for the committee the difference between putting something in subsection 1 of our EFU statutes versus subsection 2. Subsection 1, where this is put in, which raises the policy issue, are the uses that are allowed frequently referred to as outright permitted uses in the EFU zone, which means that the counties cannot adopt any additional conditions to govern these uses in order to make sure that they're compliant with surrounding farm or forest practices. In this instance, it does appear as though a building was there, but this provision would certainly allow people to build new post-prison supervision facilities in rural areas. We would certainly, as the bill is drafted, it raises a very large policy issue. I was going to bring in my list of non-farm uses that are allowed. I forgot it this morning in my haste, but suffice it to say that I can't hold it standing up. I need to be on my tippy toes to reach all these uses that are now allowed in an EFU zone. Printed a size enough so that you can actually read them. But in any case, as the bill is drafted, we would oppose it. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question?
Representative
Green. Hey, do I hear you right that you don't have a problem with it being put in as a conditional use? You only have the problem with it being put in as an absolute use?
Chair Garag, Representative Greenlick, I would want it to also serve the rural community. We have substantial concerns about attracting traffic out from communities and urban areas to site these uses on EFU land.
If I may follow, is there a chance that given the time deadline we have that this could be straightened out in the Senate? It's very clear to me that rural areas need to have police service, and that means they need to have facilities and probably even parole service. I wonder whether there is a feeling that we could move this and amend it in the Senate to move it out of where it is to where you think it ought to be. And I can't imagine Representative Dalto will have a big problem with that if we...
Well, let's bring Representative Dalto up. Thank you, Carrie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, would you restate your last comment?
Yeah, the issue is that this puts it in a place that gives it an absolute authority, as opposed to moving it in a place that would give it a conditional authority, so the county could make its own decision on the basis of a county use. I'm suggesting either if we had time to get dispensation straightened out here, or if we have a commitment to fix it in the Senate, I mean, that would make me feel very much more comfortable, because I think rural areas do need to be served.
Billy Dalto, State Representative, Oregon House District 21. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for having this hearing today and allowing me to testify. Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlake, of course it's an absolute use, and I'll explain why it should be an absolute use and not a conditional use. Marion County is 70 miles 70 miles by 70 miles in one direction, 50 miles by 50 miles in another direction, so if I had a police incident where we needed a response or we needed a patrol up the canyon up towards Detroit Lake, and we have a police substation in Staten in an urban area in the city of Staten, but Marion County goes all the way up to Idana, which is quite a distance from Staten. And so if I needed to get a police response, or if I needed to put sheriff's patrol officers on patrol, I need to bring them out from Staten to go all the way up to the canyon. And that's just one example of a very, very large county and a zone where the sheriff's department has to patrol. And so I'll get back to that later, but let me tell you the issue between the conditional use and the absolute use. The conditional use, this is a piece of property that Under Sheriff Olson has testified has been offered at no cost to the sheriff's office so they can go and put patrol officers there. And a very important other function that the sheriff's department serves is to provide parole and probation services. This simply means you have an offender that has a sentence, they're sentenced or they're released from prison, they have parole obligations, they've got to come in and interact with a parole officer. And in the state of Oregon, our parole officers and our parole services are performed through the sheriff's department. So you come in, you have your investigation, you have your discussion, your conversation, whatever it is they do, it happens in an office. So that's why, that's the importance of the parole and probation component of this bill. But I'll tell you the conditional use, the problem that the conditional use brings up is that it is for 6 months and 6 months only that you get this application. And then there is a fee attached to it. My understanding is
If we can clarify that. No, the issue is that a conditional use permit, I mean, that having as a conditional use allows the county to determine whether or not to grant the conditional use for this. It's not the temporary, and there's something going on. The problem here, I think, is because it's a conditional use that's not an allowed conditional use. And that's why it's this temporary permit. The county could cite it.
The Marion County Sheriff's Office would have to apply for a conditional use every 6 months.
No.
And in my understanding of this bill, and they would have to provide a fee every 6 months to get that conditional use permit.
No, I think the issue is here that because this is not an allowed conditional use, it turns into a problem. If you made this an authorized conditional use in under the statute, then it could be cited there permanently. Is that not?
Mr. Chairman, John Powell representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. That has been the representation that the Farm Bureau has made to us. Under Sheriff Olson said that they had a little different interpretation from their legal counsel, and we are, in fact, I've promised the Farm Bureau to continue in those discussions as the bill moves forward to see if that wouldn't be a solution to their concerns over on the Senate side.
I think we ought to carry it that way and ask them to do this because I think it would solve their problem. But then it would allow the county to cite it on a permanent basis under a conditional use permit.
Well, I anticipate we can have that discussion on the Senate side as we move this bill out. I'd just like to say, to draw the comparison between rural fire stations and the rural fire stations.
Make it
right
quick,
now.
Representative, if you would.
I'm sorry?
Make it quick.
Yeah, fire stations, we can cite fire stations and that provide fire and medical emergency services in the exclusive farm use zones, but we can't cite sheriff's substations in this EFU zone, and I don't understand the disconnect. They both provide public safety services. If I lived in a rural area, which I don't, but if I did and I called out a sheriff, I'd want to know that I could get a response in a timely manner, and that's simply what this policy would allow us to do. So,
that's the question.
Conclude my remark.
And Mr. Powell, you might be able to answer this as well. That as I'm looking at this, I mean, first of all, I agree that with Representative Dalto that we've got fire service facilities already as one of the uses. That's in sub 1Y. But then looking at the way this actually is written, it's saying that the following uses may be established, and the use, just reading this, is law enforcement or parole and prison, post-prison supervision facilities. Are we saying that it's one or the other?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Doyle, I believe that it's written that way so that parole and post-prison supervision is a noted inclusion. And I don't think it's meant to say one or the other.
Well, but
I mean, just looking at the language, I mean, to me, it's law enforcement or parole.
I think read in conjunction with the sentences that preclude that section of law where it says these are permitted, it would be law enforcement or... But I do understand your concern. Maybe you could only do one or the other.
And is that achieved, Representative Balto? I mean, that doesn't sound like it achieves your objective.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, to me the interpretation is if you don't have it delineated that way, if the sheriff's office wanted to provide parole and probation services from the same office that they provide law enforcement services, you couldn't do that without spelling it out.
Yeah.
I mean, if you eliminate the parole and post-prison supervision component of that, well, then you've got the ability to set a substation for patrol duties. But then you don't have the ability to perform the post-prison supervision and parole services.
Yeah, and I guess as I read this, I mean, I'm just seeing it's one or the other. So you're not going to be able to achieve both.
I see what you're saying. Well, we can fix that.
And Mr. Chairman, I just have one concluding remark. Thousand Friends mentioned that they would like it restricted to services in rural areas, and the language actually does provide for that by stating for providing services in rural areas.
Thank you, Mr. Powell. We're going to close the work session on House Bill 3561. Open a work session on House Bill 3120. And committee, this has a referral to Ways and Means, and I believe we have the dash two amendments.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we've got the Department of Consumer and Business Services and some others asked me to speak to them outside of the hearing room, which I did, and they are going to request, it's my understanding, that the committee rescind the referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. Gentlemen, good morning. Keep it brief, 2 minutes apiece.
Got it. I think I can do it in 1 minute. Pat Allen with the Office of Regulatory Streamlining of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The Dash 1 amendments substantially replace the existing contents of 3120. They do seven things. Two of them just move existing statute around. I'll give you the quick hit on five of them. One, it creates an advisory committee that advises our office on streamlining the rulemaking process and agencies' compliance with the parts of rulemaking that require that businesses be engaged in the process and that they adequately assess the impact on business of rulemaking. Two, it provides the option for parties to rulemaking to refer certain circumstances or instances of rulemaking and compliance to this advisory committee, although not in a way that that provides the ability to appeal on a particular rule or stop the rulemaking process. Three, it expands the opportunity for businesses to comment specifically once it tries to elicit business comments on alternatives that agencies can use to propose rules to minimize business impacts. Four, it broadens the tools that small businesses that can be used to offset impacts on small business. And seven, it repeals the requirement in current law for triennial review. I do have to say that that's a point that the bill proponents are interested in. Our office officially is, I guess you'd say, agnostic on that point. And then finally to the fiscal impact issue. In setting up my office, we fully expected that somewhere through the process we would come out with an advisory committee of some sort, and we were structured to be able to absorb that at no additional cost. You do have three bills bouncing around the building that establish advisory committees, and if you're generous enough to provide all three of those advisory committees, we would need to talk about fiscal impact.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Doyle.
Just to clarify then, on the fiscal impact, there is none. You're not adding staff to deal with this committee or task force.
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, that's correct.
Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Gallagher, representing Snitzer Steel and the Urban Developers Coalition. This has been a long time coming. I've been working on this bill for over a year. ORS Section 183 sets up the rulemaking process for agencies. You know that you've had hundreds of bills in here from different industry groups and others trying to straighten out a rule, trying to get into the process, trying to, what I call, leave big hammer dents in Section 183. This is a really a cumulative way in this 10-person committee and the report back to the legislature for 10 people plus the Office of Regulatory Streamlining to take a good hard look at the way Section 183 is structured, at the way we write rules, at the way rules interface between agencies. Take a water permit, a project that has water, they end up going to four different agencies following four different sets of rules, four different processes. This, we hope that we can put 10 good, thoughtful, administrative rules, industrial people, and industrial people on an advisory committee that's going to come back here in 2005 with a solid restructuring of the agency rulemaking process. That's the forward-looking piece. There is some activity in here for existing rules. There's the ability of somebody who's in a current rule fight to refer their process or inform this advisory committee of their process. It's a non-binding shining of a light on an existing rule that will get Corey Streisinger's office involved or will be taken into evidence on this advisory committee. There's also a couple of other places in here where people can request or can put into play less costly alternatives that achieve the same environmental outcome. And it's incumbent upon the business of the regulated community to come forward with a different way to solve the environmental problem. Not reducing the constraints, not eliminating the environmental outcomes or reducing the environmental outcome, but finding a less cost-effective way to do it. And the way we place it on this bill is it's incumbent on business to do that. And if they bring it forward, the agency has to take a look at it and quantify it and gauge it in relationship to their proposed solution. And there's incentives in the bill for the agency to move toward the least costly solution that still solves the rural, social, or environmental problem. So we think we have a little bit of a short-term fix. We think we have the beginning of a solid process. I can only say it was in this room 2 years ago. We passed 3557, which resulted in the industrial lands bill, which just passed out of the Senate committee this morning. And we think that this will help us move forward. We just checked with Bruce Anderson of the Speaker's office, and they have no difficulty removing the referral to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, one other quick point.
And Pat, earlier you mentioned you were addressing the -1 amendments. I think you meant to say the -2s.
I did. I'm not sure what -1 amendments there were. I don't think we've ever seen them. One quick point is, as originally introduced, 3120 applied to environmental regulatory agencies. The -2 amendments actually broaden this to apply to all agency rulemakings that deal with business impacts.
Any questions?
I
Representative Graham?
A brief one. What's the purpose of the deletion on page 11? The declares the policy that all possible publicly involved in that. Is that covered in the intent that this is redundant at this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, that's relocated.
Thank you.
It's relocated in section 2. I think it's sub 1, section 4, sub 1.
You have
one.
A page for that?
Page 2. The reason for that, Representative Greenlick, was exactly how convoluted section 183 has gotten. And I think those of you that are practicing attorneys on this will understand that 183 is referenced in almost every statute in the book. So we took a couple of those pieces, which were advisory committees and et cetera, and move them into a new section, hopefully to give some real direction to the agency.
We don't want to do anything to hurt the attorney business.
Everybody needs a job, Representative.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wish to speak on this bill? Randy, you're okay with 3120? Okay. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I move that the -2 amendments to House Bill 3120 be adopted.
Representative Richardson moves the -2 amendments to House Bill 3120 be adopted. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Freeman.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative Donner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. And this is the dash twos are adopted to House Bill 3120. Representative Richards.
Mr. Chair, I move that we rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee
Representative
on House Bill 3120 as amended.
Representative Richardson has moved that we rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means on the amended House Bill 3120. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Greenlatt?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Excused.
Representative Zahner?
Yes.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Garrard?
And the chair votes aye. So the subsequent referral to Ways and Means on the amended House Bill 3120 is approved. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3120 as amended be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Richardson has moved House Bill 3120 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenlatt.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Garrard.
The chair votes aye. House Bill 3120 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the chair will get to carry that. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3120, and can't see if is Dennis Mulvihill. Oh, there he is. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2607.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, 3120 was passed as amended to the floor, correct?
Correct.
Good morning. Dennis Marshall, Washington County. Bill. 2607-1 amendments.
Dennis, hang on a second. We'll have our administrator actually tell what the amendments do, because this is another one of our gut stuff.
Correct.
Specials. So
it should be a no.
We want to make sure the committee is fully informed of what they're voting on here.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the dash one amendments to House Bill 2607, which were received this morning by the administrator and by staff, appear to. To need some review by staff, because I simply have not had a chance to take a look at them.
Chair, do we have copies?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Everybody has copies of.
Everybody but me.
Here, I might have yours, Chair.
If somebody is missing copies, we will get you a copy directly.
Why don't we Dennis, hang on just a second, and the committee will stand at ease to give the committee a couple minutes to look at the amendments to this bill, and we'll stand at ease for a couple minutes. We call the committee back to session. We're discussing 2607. Dennis, would you come back up? First, I have an announcement from our administrator. Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, we've gone ahead and reviewed House Bill 2607-1 amendments, and the -1 amendments are intended to fix an oversight in the drafting of House Bill 3171 from the 2001 legislative session. House Bill 3171 created clear authority for the approval of accessory farm dwellings for seasonal and year-round farm workers in exclusive farm use zones, and it directed the Land Conservation and Development Commission to adopt rules for their review and approval. House Bill 3171 from last session was a consensus bill supported by farm, land use, local governments, and housing advocates. The rules were adopted in May 2002, were also supported by the same groups. However, House Bill 3171 inadvertently did not provide clear authority for Lane and Washington counties, the only two counties in Oregon that are marginal use counties, or marginal lands counties, excuse me, under ORS 215.213, as opposed to the EFU statute under House Bill, under statute 215.283, that all the other 34 Oregon counties utilize. The -1 amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, correct this oversight and provide clear authority for seasonal and year-round farm worker housing for Lane and Washington counties under 215.213, the same is provided for all the other counties. The amendments are supported, I'm informed, by Lane and Washington counties, the Oregon Farm Bureau, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, and the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Those people are here if you have any questions, and we believe we have a representative from Washington County up at the witness stand. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the amendments to House Bill 2607, the -1 amendments we're looking at, do replace the original measure. It is what is commonly known as a gut and stuff. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mulvihill.
Thank you. Dennis Mulvihill, Washington County. What we sought to have changed in the language, we had agreement for everyone, didn't quite get reflected in the amendments, but I think everyone who has been supporting these amendments agrees that they'd be close enough, and we can adjust them on the Senate side. So we ask that the committee go ahead and move the bill, and we will tweak it on the other side with the array of people that are listed here as supporters of the bill.
Any questions of Mr. Mulvihill? Mr. Representative?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mulvihill, is it
Mulvihill?
Mulvihill. Would you please show us in the bill where it accomplishes accessory farm worker housing for the two counties? Because as I read it, I keep seeing the word
the primary dwelling,
throughout, and it looks to me to make additional changes beyond what you're indicating.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Richardson, let me call up someone from probably the department here, and I think he'll identify that it's where there are some weaknesses in the language. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, Ron Eber with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. You correctly noted that on page 2, where it does talk, it clarified and was trying to distinguish the accessory from the primary dwellings. There was an added line that was supposed to be added that specifically authorized the accessory farm dwellings in conjunction with farm use. And they didn't add that line, and they left it so that they're on line 10, says primary accessory dwellings in conjunction with farm use, which are really only the ones on parcels larger than the minimum. And so we had wanted that added line. As I read this, it could potentially still work, but I think it creates an ambiguity. So this gets us about half to two-thirds there. And as Mr. Mulvihill points out, this will work, and we might want to try and get it further clarified on the Senate side to fix this oversight from last session, because there was a large number of groups who worked on it.
Thank you, Ron.
Mr. Chair, would it be possible, as you look at our schedule, for these amendments to take place on this side so that we are voting on an accurate bill?
Dennis, how do you feel about that? Do you want it fixed on this side, and then any bill that we hear after today will have to be approved, House bill, by the Speaker? So that's the glitch in the ointment here. What is your feeling? It's your bill. Okay. Carrie, you have a comment?
Chair Gerard, members of the committee, Carrie McLaren for 1000 Friends of Oregon. I think generally you will not hear us say this, but this bill gets us, the intent is clear, it gets us at least three quarters of the way there, and we are comfortable working with the other people to make sure that it, if it needs to be changed, that it is accurately changed on the Senate side. So I think this is one that is close enough there that we certainly feel comfortable supporting it in its present fashion.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Representative Greenwood,
like to move this one.
Please move.
I'd like to move the Dash 1 amendments to 2607.
Representative Greenlick has moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2607. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative O'Donnell.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Gerard.
Chair votes aye. The Dash 1 amendments are adopted for House Bill 2607. Representative Greenlick.
I move House Bill 2607 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Greenlick has moved House Bill 2607 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative Zahner.
Yes.
Representative Richardson.
No.
Chair Gerard.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2607 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Greenlick, would you like to carry that?
Yeah.
Representative Greenlick will carry. We close the work session on House Bill 2607. We have Representative Gallegos here, so we will move quickly to House Bill 3527 and ask the representative to come forward, please.
And Mr. Chair, while you're waiting, just to clarify, 2607 was passed as amended to the floor,
amended.
Correct?
That's correct. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Administrator, if you'll inform the committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3527 authorizes the governor in an economic emergency to override zoning laws and regulations to permit development of and construction on land. It defines economic emergency, it prescribes conditions for the governor's exercise of emergency powers, and authorizes certain individuals to seek review of the governor's order in the Oregon Supreme Court, declares an emergency effective on passage, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members,
I'm sorry to have to ask you to hold your comments as brief as possible.
I'd be happy to. For the record, my name is Mary Gallegos. I'm a state representative from House District 49, which is Forest Grove, 48th, and Hillsborough. And the bill is quite simple. I've outlined it there in some testimony. It's just a tool. And clearly, we can't be here all year long. We don't want to be here all year long, and we can't mitigate every land use issue as we try to get our economy to bounce back. We want more businesses to come here. Good example from Washington County, Applied Materials wanted to come. They, for reasons that were their own, they wanted to build within Washington County and needed 55-ish acres, and it wasn't available. We were fortunate enough to have them settle for something much smaller, much less. But the terrible thing is a lot fewer jobs. We could have used a lot more jobs. This just outlines the opportunity for the governor to declare an economic emergency and under certain conditions and help us get through this. Should those cases arise again, where businesses aren't able to find suitable or land for their needs or a difficult, long, timely process, help mitigate that, and help site some of these facilities should people want to bring jobs to Oregon. I don't think it's a bad thing. It's just a tool. It doesn't make him use these things. Just sits there waiting in the tool belt, waiting until we need it.
Thank you, Representative. Yep. Any questions? Representative Ackerman.
Yes, Representative, could you tell me how this works? I'm referring to Section 2. And doesn't this look like the temporary taking of real estate, real property interests by executive action?
Well,
without compensation.
I'm not an attorney. I'm Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, so I couldn't, and I would be happy to go get more, some assistance from someone in legal counsel, should I need to do that. But what we asked for was some parameters to work within, being the size of the business, the construction jobs that would be available, and supersiding similar to that of prisons that would help mitigate some of the land use planning issues. There was no intent to do any takings, and I don't believe that that's what I think anybody wants to do. It's land that should be available for construction and industrial use.
We have Mr. Garza, who is the lead appellate staff attorney for the Oregon Supreme Court, and I'm going to ask Mr. Garza to come up and maybe perhaps he can address that question, Representative. Mr. Garza, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Keith Garza. I'm the lead appellate staff attorney for the Oregon Supreme Court. And I apologize, I missed your introductory comments. I was talking with the committee administrator.
We had a question from Representative Ackerman. Could you restate the question to Mr. Garza?
My question is, it appears to me that the gubernatorial power here presents several problems. First, that the orders which she may issue under these circumstances may constitute a partial take in real estate without compensation. And secondly, I have a question regarding separation of powers. Can the governor, who authorized the governor to do this, in the separation of powers doctrine?
Just a moment. Also, we have another representative from the
legal
department, and I'll ask Chris to come forward. And now I think we have the full battery here.
Both sides.
We're addressing Representative Ackerman's question. Would you like to have it restated also so that we can...
Chair Girard, yes, I would, and I would start... my name is Harrison Conley, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I would start with that this is not a bill that I drafted, so I'm going to have to look at it a little bit and hopefully try to catch up as we go along here.
Okay, and unfortunately, we don't have much more time to spend on this bill, so Representative Ackerman,
this is my third bite of the apple, so my first question is... relates to the separation of powers. It looks as if you're giving the governor quasi-judicial power to direct orders and direct the use of real property. Secondly, if that is true, isn't this a partial taking of real estate interests without compensation?
Chair Girard, Representative Ackerman, the Oregon Judicial Department does not have a position on this bill. As its staff attorney, I participate to some extent in the consideration and adjudication of matters that come before the court. That puts me in a pretty awkward position to comment on questions of substantive law, such as whether this constitutes a partial taking or whether there are separation of powers issues. I apologize for that, but I don't think it would be appropriate for me to offer an opinion on the subject.
Thank you. Carl?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, I guess under the circumstances, I'm going to have to take sort of the same kind of line. I really have not read this closely, and that would be a very large opinion to state without spending a little more time than I have with this.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all very much. We will close the work session on House Bill 3527. And we will open the work session on House Bill 2860. which now has the Dash 3 Amendments Committee. By the way, committee, we will not hear this morning House Bill 2909 or 2911. We're going to try to move those to the committee at a later date.
We have Dash 3s to this?
Yes. We should have Dash 3s to 2860.
Yes, Mr. Chair, those were passed out.
The committee have any questions on the Dash 3 amendments to Mr. Chandler?
Mr. Chair, what bill are we on this?
2860.
Thank you. I think I may, if I can just get organized.
Welcome to the group, Representative.
I've been trying since early January.
Are we considering the ones as well, or just the threes? What are we up to here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's my understanding that Dash 3 supersede all prior amendments, and we're getting a sense from our advocates out there. And as you speak, I'm going through the bill.
Mr. Chandler, did you address the three Dash 3s?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler on the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2860. As I said briefly earlier this morning, we had a problem with the Dash 2s in that a piece of the original bill that should have was deleted in the original bill needed to get restored. The Dash 3s do that. The additional language in the Dash 3s is language that's been agreed to by us, Oregon's in Action, 1,000 Friends, and the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Aside from the wonderful merits of this bill, I'd point out that particular lining up of the planets doesn't occur very darned often, and I just wanted to call that to your attention. We're all probably going to get fired immediately after doing this, but fortunately we'll go work for state government. That's where the money is. So,
at least in retirement.
At least till 11. So, Mr. Chairman, that the basic change is one we discussed at the earlier hearing on this bill. I'm more than happy to walk the committee through it. These amendments address the point you're trying to make with the Yamhill County case with regard to taking an exception, and all the folks that were interested in that issue have agreed to this language. And thank you for your indulgence earlier.
Thank you. Mr. Honeycutt? Got 1 minute?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking as for the Dash 3s. I was just here to answer any questions about the Yamhill County case if anybody had any, but if no one has any questions, that's fine by me.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Carrie McLaren speaking for 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I concur with what has been discussed and described with respect to the Dash 3 amendments for House Bill 2860. We are in support of those Dash 3 amendments, and I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Any questions of our panel? Seeing none, Representative Zahn.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments to 2860.
Representative Zahner moves the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2860. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Noel?
Aye.
Greenlight?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Excused.
Representative Zahner?
Aye.
Representative
Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Gerard?
Chair votes aye. The Dash 3 amendments are moved to House Bill 2860. Representative Zahner.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2860 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Zahner moves House Bill 2860 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Barrett.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2860 is moved to the floor. Do we have a volunteer to carry?
Okay.
Representative Richardson volunteers. Representative Richardson will carry 2860 as amended with a due pass recommendation to the floor, and we will close the work session on House Bill 2860. Representative Butler, is he still here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler asked that we call him on his cell phone when 2898 comes up.
Okay, we will then Let's see. We'll move on to House Bill 3315. Representative Richardson is going to explain 3315. Maybe perhaps our administrator would like to, in that we haven't had any previous testimony on this bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3315 authorizes construction of a single-family dwelling on a lot or parcel where the dwelling could have been constructed as of November 4, 1993. It requires a landowner to apply to the governing body of a city or county for approval for construction of the dwelling. It requires the city or county or its designee to approve or deny an application within 120 days of the date when the application was submitted. And House Bill 3315 provides for judicial review of denial of the application and specifies which regulations apply to siting and construction of the dwelling, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dennis Richardson, House representing for House District Number 4. This bill is in response to the original House Bill 2137, which was known as Son of Measure 7, which it was determined was too broad of a bill to make it through the process this session. After a careful review of the testimony that we had on 2137 and the need that was expressed by so many people who had lost their rights to do what they had been able to do when they purchased property, we decided that House Bill 3315 would be a property rights restoration bill. And just briefly, in way of background, in the 80s, there were a small number of private citizens who bought parcels of Oregon land with the hope to someday build the home of their dreams. And with the stroke of a pen, those dreams were dashed in the rocks of government regulations when Oregon land use laws changed and the opportunity for those landowners to build their homes was taken away from them, taken without notice, taken without due process, taken without just compensation, which is guaranteed by our Constitution. House Bill 3315 seeks to rectify this situation by offering those few property owners the opportunity to build their homes. Quite simply, under House Bill 3315, a landowner who had the right to build a home at the time that they purchased their property and lost that right by zoning laws that took place in the early 90s will again have that right restored to them to get a building permit for a two-year period after this bill is signed into law.
Thank you, Representative. We will not be looking at the amendments.
That's correct.
We will not consider the amendments. Any questions of Representative Richardson? Representative Ackerman.
Representative Richardson, as I understand this, a owner would submit an application to the appropriate governing authority. I don't find any language in House Bill 3315 that tells me that we should determine the original intent of the owner to site a dwelling on their property before the key date in November of 93. In other words, if I was a landowner and I did not intend to have a dwelling on the property, but now could I not take advantage of this and get my building permit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, it would be impossible to go back into subjective mind intent of 20 years ago. What this merely does is try and restore to a property owner the rights that they had at the time that they purchased the property, not necessarily what they were thinking at that time, because their rights to build a home on their property, if they had that right before 1994, was taken from them without notice, without due process, without the opportunity for them to have a hearing. It was just taken by governmental mandate, and that is unfair, and so we're trying to restore that right to those limited property owners.
Okay, I have another question. My follow up. In terms of the court review process, this would proceed under Chapter 33, pursuant to a writ of review, with an add-on that you get a jury trial. And the way I understand the writ of review process, the writ of review process is usually a non-jury matter, and the scope of review of the local governing body's decision is extremely narrow. I don't see a fit within that. Can you talk to your attention?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, the intent here is out of the ordinary, and what we don't want to have is for a property owner who wants to take advantage of this opportunity to be buried and prevented from taking advantage of it because of bureaucracy created by those who in the past have prevented them from doing what they're now trying to do. And so what we've attempted to do with this wording is to give them the opportunity, if they're prevented from having the permit, to go to a jury trial and have 12 of their peers determine whether or not they owned the property before 1994, they had the right for a home to be built, and they're now being prevented from getting a permit to doing so.
A couple more problems.
Like a brief one.
The landowner, upon a successful appeal to the at the court level, will be entitled to reasonable expenses in addition to attorney's fees and costs. That term is not defined. Could you tell us what you mean by that?
Chair Girard, Representative Ackerman, a judge actually would have to make that determination. What we're trying to do is make sure that a property owner, a private citizen, who is forced to go to court to take advantage of the provisions of this statute or this bill would not be thwarted in being able to do it because he couldn't afford to get an appraiser and couldn't afford to get a surveyor who would have to be brought in for some reason. We can't anticipate all that would be involved with having to litigate under the provisions of this bill. All we're trying to do is make sure that a private citizen who's forced to go to court and prevails at court would have his expenses returned to him.
That concludes my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, sir. Representative Richardson, I just have one brief question. You talked about their rights being taken away without due process, and in this sense, I'm not an attorney, so I don't know whether due process is a term of art. I mean, something that happened at a court, but these actions, you're not suggesting that these actions weren't legitimate actions by the city or county or LCDC. I mean, they were all in process, and these people had a chance to testify and to raise issues. Is that
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, what you're describing is due process, where you're given notice that there's going to be a change that affects your rights or your property, and you have the opportunity to come in and testify. But what took place in the early 90s, due to fiscal costs of having to send out notice, that wasn't done. And zoning changes were made by governmental decision without notifying the property owners that these changes were going to take place or that it would affect their properties.
Thank you, sir. You're welcome. Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Richardson. Representative Zahner, you have a...
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have all those in opposition.
Like 1 minute each.
One minute apiece, gentlemen, because committee, we have been excused from the floor session at 10:30 unless they need a quorum, and then we'll have to adjourn. So we still have a few very important things on our agenda. So Randy started off, and you got a minute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Randy Tucker, 1000 Friends of Oregon. I will try to.
And I apologize for holding the opposition and both sides on this issue to the limited discussion that we're able to have. I apologize for that, but unfortunately time just doesn't permit us to.
Appreciate that, Mr. Chair. Well, then I'll be even briefer. You won't be surprised to hear that we strongly oppose House Bill 3315. 1000 Friends of Oregon opposes House Bill 3315. This bill would seriously undermine some of the protections we have for our farm and forest zones. Would also affect protections for riparian areas against harm to public resources and water quality that would fall outside the nuisance category, the nuisance exemption in this bill. The state of Oregon did something like this in 1993. They provided a lot of record provision in House Bill 3661 for people that owned their land before the comprehensive plans went into effect. And at that point, I feel it's fair to say that people were on notice that we do land use planning in Oregon. And that there are some restrictions on especially the use of farm and forest land for residential uses. We also As I've previously testified, there is a notice provision that people sign a form when they purchase property. This has been in effect since the late 80s, so indicating that when you own farm and forest land, you may not have development opportunities on that land. Not every parcel in the farm zones has always been entitled to a house. And so there are several questions about the drafting of this bill. The last line on page one, the owner acquired the water crossing before November 4th, 1993. That leaves open a loophole where people could repurchase a property that they owned at that time in order to get the opportunity for the subsequent owner to build a house.
Wrap it up, man.
I will. And there are several other technical questions, but in general, on a policy level, we believe this is a serious rollback to the protections we have against houses in our farm and forest zones. One last thing, Mr. Chair. The bill identifies prime farmland as the only kind of farmland to which these provisions of the bill do not apply. That's a very, very narrow exemption that cuts out a very large amount of Oregon's productive farmland base. I'll end there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
My name is John Brosi. I'm a planning consultant. I'm speaking in favor of the House bill. There's enough exceptions that have already been taken by owners in some counties prior to 1993 that there are some parcels that become embedded or left behind in EFU zoning, but isolated from actual EFU activities and EFU-sized parcels by all the exception lands, which are much smaller and not operating as farms. So the since you aren't considering any amendments to 3315, I'll just say that I think all the other restrictions are prudent. We're not rolling this back to the Stone Age. We're talking about 1993 when there were significant changes to the exception process in the APU, and I think it's fair and reasonable and urge your passage.
Thank you very much. Don, Ron, and Dave.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. This bill addresses two issues. One's a policy issue, and the other is a fairness issue, the way I read the bill. The policy issue is that of lot of record. We did the lot of record bill in 1993, House Bill 3661. We allowed lot of record dwellings on other than high-value farmland. It did not allow dwellings on high-value farmland. What this bill does is allow a lot of record dwellings on high-value farmland, except for a very narrow exception, those lands that are called prime, and only those that have been farmed in three out of the last 5 years. So it's a very narrow thing. Though what happens then is, generally speaking, with a lot of record, you allow a number of non-farmed dwellings. They don't qualify for a farm dwelling now. Now, there may be some legitimate farm dwellings in there as well, so it'd be a combination of both farm dwellings and non-farm dwellings. The fairness issue was just described, and that was where the LCDC changed the farm dwelling criteria in 94. So between 85 and 94, they could have built under whatever conditions the county had in place for a farm dwelling, and then the LCDC provisions set up what we have today in the income test on high-value farmland, and then the three options of income, acreage test, and a comparability test on other than high-value. So that's the fairness issue there. They had a right taken away from them, and this would restore that right, except for the fact that many of the dwellings under this bill would be non-farm dwellings in the farm zone. This bill makes the most sense, I think, of any of the bills that we've heard on this issue this session. But because of the non-farm dwelling issue, Farm Bureau would still have to ask that you not pass the bill.
Thank you, Don.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of House Bill 3315 for all of the equitable reasons that you've heard, and Representative Dennis Richardson certainly pointed out. Just to answer a couple of technical questions that Representative Ackerman asked, the intent of the landowner at the time, I think, is irrelevant because it was the actual loss is resulting from the purchase price, and so the purchase price would be the same whether you intended to build on the property or not. If you could have built on the property at the time you purchased it, that ability would be reflected in the purchase price. So whatever the subjective intent of the person buying the property at the time would be irrelevant. They paid the price for their ability to use the property. The Representative Richardson correctly points out the flaw with the notice requirements. This bill would only affect people who lost the ability to build prior to the time that Measure 56 had become the law. Measure 56 became the law in 1998. This applies to people who lost the right on or after 1993, but who owned the property prior to 1993. And really, the people who will have lost the right to build were probably the ones who lost the right as a result of the 1994 administrative rules adopted by LCDC. So that answers that technical question. And then in regards to the writ of review question that you had, that Representative Ackerman had, the bill on line 25 of page 2 of the bill provides that except as provided in this section, the writ of review provisions apply, and then subsection 2 gives the two provisos. So the way that I read that language is that essentially it gives the option to the person bringing the claim to either use the writ of review process on the record review or to opt to go to a jury trial and put on evidence and have the jury make the determination. So this is a great, a very fair and equitable bill, and certainly will solve a lot of the problems that this committee has heard over the last 4 or 5 months.
Thank you. Mr. Ebert?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ron Ebert with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Our concerns with the bill is that it is broad. We believe the changes that were made in 1993 have been working. There have been 823, a lot of record dwellings, and over 2,200 non-farm dwellings, mostly outside the Willamette Valley in eastern and southern Oregon, that have been approved in our farm zones. As you are aware, Mr. Chair, the department and the governor's office have had discussions with you regarding some adjustments and changes to the lot of record law to address these fairness issues. We are responsive to that. We'd like to continue that. I believe those discussions would be more productive than proceeding with House Bill 3315 as it's now drafted.
Thank you. Any quick questions? Thank you. Panel? Representative Zoner.
I move 3315 to the House for the due pass recommendation.
Representative Zoner moves House Bill 3315 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Jackson.
No.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Wingless.
No.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative Zoner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3315 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Richardson, would you carry? Close the work session on House Bill 3315. As a courtesy to Representative Delta, we're going to go back and open the work session on House Bill 3561. Representative, I believe you addressed the concerns. Would you come up for a moment?
What number are you? Billy Dalton, State Representative Oregon House District 21. Representative Doyle brought up a concern about the change in the bill, so we were having an amendment drafted to just clarify that the Sheriff's Office do perform both functions, law enforcement and post-prison supervision and parole services. So I get that clarified.
Great. Thank you very much. We close the work session on 3561 and open a work session on House Bill 3408. We have a Mr. Day. We have a -1 amendment on 3408.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Ross Day, Oregonians in Action. The -1 amendments address a couple of issues that have arisen. in Washington County and are intended to, the first part of the Dash 1 amendments are intended to address a very specific area of property in the Washington County area where it's basically an island of land. You've heard, I think, one of the previous speakers had mentioned about how this was kind of a forgotten piece of land. This is what kind of happened with this particular parcel. It's surrounded by the UGB and rural residential land as well. The county tried to take an exception, wasn't able to. This would allow the county, if they so choose, to rezone this property as rural residential, which is what it was before periodic review brought it out of rural residential. The second part of the bill is House Bill 3457, which creates a deferred replacement dwelling permit. That bill had or has bipartisan support in both the House and the Senate. And I misspoke. The parcel that we're talking about is not surrounded by the UGB. I apologize. It's bounded on one side by the UGB. The remainder of it is bounded by rural residential property. I apologize for that. Back to 3457, it allows a deferred replacement dwelling permit in certain circumstances. So with that, I have nothing further. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
So we are talking about the Dash 1 amendment.
The Dash 1 amendment is
okay.
Correct.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action. I'm just here to answer any, with Mr. Day to answer any questions if the committee has any questions.
Seeing none, thank you. Anyone else wish to speak on this bill? Terry? I'd be disappointed now if you didn't come up. So.
I've been so supportive today. Chair Gerard, members of the committee, Carrie McLaren speaking on behalf of 1,000 Friends of Oregon. Hopefully I seem to not be able to enunciate very well for the moment. I have not seen the actual amendments to House Bill 3408. I do have, however, a copy of a memorandum that was provided to me by OIA. I disagree with a couple of interpretations. Just specifically, this is not something that gives a county the authority to or allows them to if they so choose. But at least in my memorandum says an area of land is entitled to an exception. So it does not allow any assessment as to whether or not these lands are actually still used in conjunction with farm use. I also know that the acreage is really quite large. It's an area of land containing not fewer than 300 acres and not more than 435 acres. While this bill may appear to be narrowly drafted, I am not certain that on the ground that will be its actual implication, and it seems to comprise rather large areas of perhaps highly productive farmland. In the Willamette Valley, and particularly in the Portland area, there's a growing niche market for high-value agricultural crops who are looking for areas of land like this. We're looking to expand that kind of marketing opportunity for value-added products. I think this undermines that. The speakers before me did accurately state that House Bill 3457, which I believe has been incorporated in this bill, does have bipartisan support and support by 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I will be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to testify? Art?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. Earlier this morning, I sent the chair a note indicating that 3408 had a problem with it because it had a major 30 impact. This gut and stuff of 3408 relieves those concerns, and we have at this point no position with respect to this bill.
Thank you. Representative Richardson, you had a question of Mr. Honeycutt.
Mr. Honeycutt or Mr. Day, on page 2, there's a blank that needs to be filled in on the Dash 1 amendments. Wondering if you could answer that. It concludes a sentence that says, the average size of lawfully created lots or parcels bordering the area is less than blank acres.
Okay, I need one more.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, we are getting the, we thought all the blanks had been filled in. We are getting the actual blank.
Yes. It says the average size of lawfully created lots or parcels bordering the area is less than blank acres.
Should be 15.
Okay, maybe conceptual amendment.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Dave Plunkett, I would also point out that that this measure only applies to the marginal lands counties. There are two marginal lands counties in this state, Lane and Washington. So this measure only applies in Lane. That section only applies in Lane and Washington counties. And if you look at the narrowness of the language, it's clear it would only apply to essentially this particular piece, this particular area.
Thank you. We're deliberating at the moment as to whether a conceptual is possible on that, in that it may change the fiscal. The committee will stand at ease for a moment. Sorry. Okay. Representative Doyle.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee pass a conceptual amendment to House Bill 3408, where on page 2, line 2, the space between van and acres is filled in with the number 15.
Representative Doyle has moved the change to the amendment to add 15 acres to, which line was it?
Page 2, line 2, Mr.
Page
Chair.
Page 2, line 2. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just as a procedural issue that, you know, with a conceptual amendment is not something that I think any committee wants to do, but we have this gap, and given the timing of getting this bill completed, you know, this can be filled in at the time that the bill gets drafted for consideration by the chamber. And there was another concern that this may have some kind of financial impact. And at that point, I would at least make the suggestion that if there is a fiscal impact that is not being considered, that then it's up to the committee to then move the bill back to committee for further consideration if that's required.
It's always nice to have the chair of the Rules Committee on your committee. Thank you, Dave. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to vote no just to, because I don't think a sufficient record has been developed for my mind to come to an affirmative conclusion, but I will, rather than hold the bill up and ask for more testimony, I'll talk to the principals, but I'll vote no and may change my vote on the House floor.
Thank you.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Greenland?
Excused.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Excused.
Representative Donner?
Yes.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Garrard.
And Chair votes aye. The conceptual amendment is of 15 acres on line 2, page 2, line 2, is approved. And let's see, Representative Doyle, would you?
Sure, I will move the dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3408 as amended.
Representative Doyle moves the dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3408
Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
No.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenlander.
Excused.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Garrard.
Chair votes aye. The dash one amendments to House Bill 3408 are adopted. Representative Doyle.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3408 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Doyle moves House Bill 3408 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
No.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenwood.
Excused.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Garrard.
And the chair votes aye. House Bill 3408, as amended, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And do we have a volunteer to carry this? Representative Zahner?
Sure.
Thank you. Representative Zahner will carry. We close the work session on House Bill 3408. Reopen the work session on House Bill 3561. Representative Zahner.
3561. Mr. Chair, I move the motion.
Yes.
I move 3561 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Zahner has moved House Bill 3561 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I apologize. I was napping there. I got off my nap.
Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenwald.
Aye. Excused.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Garrard.
The chair votes aye. House Bill 3561 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Dalter will carry. Okay, we will now open a work session in House Bill 2898. Mr. Lynch. Committee, we've got three bills left on the schedule and approximately 10 minutes. So, Mr. Lynch, I'm sorry, you'll have to really confine your comments, and I apologize to you for having to do that.
Sir, I can do that. For the record, my name is Gary Lynch. I'm the Assistant Director of the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. We've worked with Representative Butler, Representative of the Eastern Oregon Mining Association, representatives from the aggregate industry. We've identified no opposition to this bill. The department has been a strong advocate of the establishment of a bond pool for those who are willing, and for those who join, that there be provisions to expand our current tools to provide performance bonds for reclamation. Currently, we have irrevocable letters of credit, and we have surety bonds. Since 9/11, the events of 9/11 have driven the cost of those premiums to the point where many of the smaller mining community and many of the larger ones are now paying large costs that really don't go into reclamation. This bill will give us the opportunity to form a bond pool for those who want to join. And while we haven't got all the details worked out, we believe we can work with the key players to establish this, and would be more than willing to come back to the next session and let you know how we did, or however this committee would like it to work out.
Any questions? Mr. Lynch. Seeing none, thank you. Anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2898 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Richardson has moved House Bill 2898 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye. Excused.
Representative
Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2898 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Butler will carry.
Okay, we'll open a, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2898 and open a work session on House Bill 3459.
Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. You got 5 minutes.
I won't take that long. Mr. Chairman, I'll make this very quick. House Bill 3459 is in response to House Bill 3326 that was passed in the last legislative session, approved by the Assembly and the consent of the Governor. It has to do with non-farm parcel, and the original bill qualifies all of the stipulations, what kind of land would be qualified for this. What this bill did in 3326 originally simply said that a parcel that qualified could divide two parcels off from it, from the parent parcel. So you could have a non-farm parcel and divide two parcels off. When the department made the rules process and they made the rules on this bill, instead of allowing the two parcels to divide it off at any time, they said those had to be divided off at the same day. In other words, the parent parcel lost the ability to divide two parcels off if they didn't do it in the same day. I believe that was just simply an oversight. All this bill does is rectify that says a owner of a parcel that qualifies for the division can divide those two parcels off at two different times. Does not lose that ability to divide that off simply by not doing it on the same day. That's the simple explanation of the bill, Mr. Chairman. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Committee have any questions? We've just been informed by the clerk, who is standing right behind us, that we will vote on this bill and then adjourn. So, any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I move
motion.
I move 3459 of the floor of the Duke House recommendation.
Representative Zahner has moved House Bill 3459 to the floor with the Duke House recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Arena.
Excused.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative Honor.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Gerard.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3459 is moved to the floor for the due pass recommendation, and since Representative Greg Smith is the sponsor, we'll name Mr. Greg Smith, Representative Smith, the carrier on the bill. And we will adjourn the House Committee on Environment and Land Use with my apologies to those of you who did not have the rest of the bills heard today.
Thank you.